For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rant of Troy Radio, episode 451, coming to you on Wednesday, October 5th, ahead of Saturday night's primetime battle between your 5-0 USC Trojans and the 4-1 Washington State Cougars. We're going to preview the game, make our predictions, open up a mailbag, and so much more here on this episode. As always, you can feel free to follow us on social media. We're here at Rant of Troy on Twitter and Facebook. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. We are live on YouTube, and our email address is rantoftroy@fansided.com. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host, Alicia Daratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. It is another week, another big time game for USC. These 2 weeks, dare I say, these 2 weeks, biggest 2 weeks of the season thus far?
Absolutely. Yes, 100%. Obviously, the Utah game sort of speaks for itself, but you don't get the Utah game to be as big as it could possibly be if you screw up against a Washington State team that has been very good this year and is, you know, we were talking before the show started, is just a couple of bad minutes away from being undefeated coming into this matchup. Mm-hmm. So this is a huge, huge game coming up this weekend and an even bigger game coming up 2 weeks from now. Well, I guess less than 2 weeks from now, but next weekend. And this is the difference between a team that is, you know, year one growing pain sort of has to be content with 9-3, 8-4, and a team that will legitimately have playoff hype coming into the final stretch of the season.
Yeah. Realistically, I don't think there's any shame to go through these 2 weeks and split them 1-1. But if you can get through these 2 weeks, the sky is the ceiling for USC. They get through these 2 weeks with two wins. They go 7-0. Odds on favorite to win the conference. Odds on favorite to make the playoff, etc. All of those things. And SC season completely in their hands at that point. Washington State, a contender up on the north side of things. I know that there's no divisions. I know.
But it still feels like there are.
Easier to say north side of things. Yeah. You look at Utah next week, and I don't want to talk about Utah much because it's easy to look ahead, and SC's got a big opponent on their slate this week in Washington State. As always, thanks for everybody joining us here on YouTube. Josh in the chat, we got Tim, Connor, thanks for everybody joining us along here on Wednesday. As we look ahead to SC and Wazoo, we'll be back with a CarCast Saturday night, right after the game, I expect to see a bunch of you because it's a primetime game, and it's going to be exciting to see what we can do with the CarCast during the primetime. Hasn't been a primetime game since week two when USC played at Stanford in week two. Here we are, second month of the season, another primetime game for the Trojans and a primetime CarCast as well. Be sure to like the stream here on YouTube and subscribe. Help grow the show, share it along with your friends, and all of that.
Yeah, we can never grow big enough. To be quite honest, we can never grow big enough. And we are so excited with the growth that we've already experienced. And we're looking to forward to even bigger and better things for the Rant of Troy community coming up. So keep tuning in, keep letting your friends know, and there's stuff coming down the line for you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's start with the news. Not much news to discuss, but still wanted to get to some news nonetheless.
Hey everyone, it's Mike Silva from Talking Mets. I am always about helping my listeners, and today I want to help you eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. My wife and I tried it, and we love it. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. I was tired after a long day the other night, and I was at the table eating a delicious meal just minutes after walking in the door. Are you looking for a gourmet meal? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccoli, and asparagus. You can also choose from a weekly menu of 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Don't forget your add-ons. There are 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? The Mets set the playoffs as their goal this year. Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/Mets50 and use code Mets50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code Mets50 at factormeals.com/Mets50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I tried Factor and loved it. Why don't you?
Alicia, you know the only good thing about football season being over?
There's literally nothing good about the football season being over. It's just an endless wait until the fall.
See, that's where you're wrong. It's tournament season. The best way to take your mind off the endless wait.
That is true. I may not want to watch the men play, but the USC women are pretty awesome.
Exactly, but it's not just SC. There's high-stake basketball moments all over the country. But you know what? They get even better with Prize Picks.
So you're saying the only thing better than watching Juju Watkins is taking the more on Juju Watkins.
Bingo. You can now turn your hoops knowledge and love of Juju Watkins into serious cash. Because you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. Turn $10 into $1,000 with college basketball, NBA, and NHL entries. Best of all, Prize Picks lets you get on the action on more than 30 states across the country, including Texas, Georgia, and California.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, download the app today and use the code RANTOFTROY for a first deposit match up to $100.
That's the Prize Picks app with the code RANTOFTROY for the first deposit match up to $100.
Pick more.
Pick less.
It's that easy.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, Alicia, we talked about it in the end of the Did we talk about the end of the show on Monday?
Yeah, it was in the mailbag on Monday.
Yeah, it was in the mailbag. We talked about the band, the USC band, and how there's some structural integrity issues over in the Sun Deck. And there was an update. I want to read the tweet that comes from Brett Paddleford, who is the head of communications for the band, the Spirit of Troy, TMB, who tweeted out on Tuesday. This is actually on Tuesday afternoon. Sun Deck update. I heard back from the Coliseum and Athletics, and they are bringing in structural engineers to check it out. I appreciate all the support from USC Twitter. Hopefully we should have a solid place to stand on Saturday. And again, this goes back to a video that he posted on Monday afternoon of the Sun Deck just shaking and looking precarious, to say the least.
Yeah, and we already have a message in the chat from Connor. Happy Wednesday from a TMB member. Thank you for raising awareness on the Sun Deck situation. Excited for Saturday. Yeah, we always want to look out for the band. As soon as I saw that video, I was just like, nope. You cannot do this to the band. Cannot take this seriously. And fortunately, USC does seem to be taking it seriously.
Yep.
I still would like to hear that it got reinforced or something so that it's not shaking by Saturday, because that's the next time the band will be up there. I still don't want them to just stop at, well, the structural engineers came in and said it's perfectly fine. Like, as I said on Twitter, even if the experts come in and say, like, there's no danger of collapse or failure here, I still don't think it's fair to the band members to have it wobbling like that under any circumstances. I also thought it was interesting that we saw several tweets from band members in the past who said that previous years it was not like that. It was not shaking like that. Like, there's something going on here. So my hope would be that they figure out what it is, they reinforce it, they get it together, and seriously consider, and I know this is, in the short term, they have short-term things to take care of. In the long term, I would like them to seriously reevaluate where the band is placed and what the context of where the band is in the stadium. Personally, I would have them have the band back with the student section. I get why they don't, but personally, that's what I would do. But if you're not going to do that, think about what you need to do for permanence when it comes to the Sun Deck and everything that's going on there. Unfortunately, do I think that that's the kind of thing that'll get solved or put in before the Olympics? Probably not.
No, but just structurally, there can't be.
I would hope that once the Olympics are done, that they do something with the Sun Deck that feels a lot more permanent and doesn't feel like high school bleachers.
Yes, I agree. At the same point, I've seen a lot of, nobody is a fan of the Sun Deck, and I get it, but I've seen things like, this is the Sun Deck is the biggest eyesore in all of college football.
I don't know about that.
I think people are overselling how, like, obviously the structural issue completely is horrendous, and I'm not speaking to that in of itself, but like the existence of the Sun Deck, everybody, like every stadium that has an area like this had something like the Sun Deck at some point. Colorado had it, and eventually they ended up remodeling and they made it significantly better. Texas had one of those little Sun Deck areas, and they ended up fixing it, and it significantly better what they have now. It's like fully bowled in and the whole bit.
Yeah. So
I don't know what the answer is, because it's such a weird spot, but it would be weirder if there was nothing there.
Yeah, and that's why I don't think that the solution is to just get rid of it and just have a big patch of unused space in the Coliseum. I think there needs to be a plan for sort of the future that integrates that area of the stadium with the football field. And like I said, the prospect of doing that before the Olympics happens, I think the Olympics will dictate a lot of what happens with the rest of the stadium. But Connor says that he thought that the plan for this year was to put the band back with the student section. But he's not sure what happened between the spring game and the season. So My hope is just this entire saga, aside from get the damn thing fixed, please, is that it brings more attention to the fact that, like, that something should be done with that thing. Like, I hope it's not, I hope it's not like back of mind that.
I think there's a lot of cool things they can do with that whole area.
This was a temporary fix that has not been very temporary. So
I think the plan of recourse here, I think, is very simple. Put the band in the student section right now. Build a more stable sun deck area that is better than what is currently existing, that can last through the 2027 season, five more years. The 2028 season, we know that SC is going to be playing at either at SoFi or the Rose Bowl or who knows, whatever Home Depot Center is called now. I don't know, somewhere. Dodger Stadium, maybe? That'd be weird. And then 2029, I want a permanent solution at the Coliseum for that whole area. You can put bars there. You can put a pool. I don't know. You can get nutty with it.
Hey, I mean, that's the thing.
Think of the revenue opportunity.
They could very easily create a standing room sort of party section like they have at more modern stadiums there.
Yes, they could
integrate that pretty well if they do it right. Now, doing it right is the other question, but
because they've tried it.
SoFi has that stuff, and people love it with those suites. Well, the people who get to be in those suites love it. So.
I mean, you can't see the game from there.
I mean, but the people who go to those things aren't there to see the game.
This is true. Yeah, they're going there because their boss got free tickets.
Yes. Yeah, and their boss can get those tickets and pay for those tickets or whatever they want, and the Coliseum can rake in that revenue. And the clout chasers can be there all they want if the money is coming in. Like, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah. And that money can be redistributed
to the band, maybe.
Hey, there we go.
Radical thought.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get into talking about Saturday nights. Saturday nights, a big game on Fox, 4:30 p.m. Noah Eagle and Mark Helfrich on the call on Big Fox, 4:30 p.m. Saturday, October 8th. It's going to be a big one. We talked about Washington State, 4-1, but they are like 3 minutes away from being 5-0. This is a very interesting team, a team that I don't think anyone had expectations for going into the true year one for Jake Dickert as the full-time head coach. He took over for Nick Rolovich last year. And this is Jake Dickert's shot, and he's making it count, right? Something that Nick Rolovich didn't do. And 7-4 all told last year, and 7-6. Wait, hold on. What are these numbers you wrote down?
Washington State's record last year was 7-6. Jake Dickert's record as a head coach is 7-4. He was 3-3 as the head coach last year. He is 4-1 now. So I think I mathed properly.
Fair enough.
I probably could have written it more clearly, though, to be honest.
Either way, 4-1 this year. And like I said, if not for the ultimate cooging that they had against Oregon, they'd be undefeated. They went to Wisconsin and got a big road win in Madison, 17-14. We know Wisconsin is not the Wisconsin of old. They just fired Paul Christ. Mm-hmm. Colorado State, I thought beating Colorado State 38-7 is good because, you know, Colorado State, a Mountain West team, if you beat a Mountain West team by 31 points, it's what you should be doing. And in reality, that is what you should be doing. But then we see that Colorado State is like historically bad.
Like the state of Colorado might be the worst state in terms of like states that have more than one Division One program. This might be the worst football showing for a state in the history of football.
It is horrendous for Colorado State. Yeah. And then they lose narrowly to Oregon, had the big Coogan experience, 44-41.
Which all told, the narrow loss to Oregon is an impressive loss when you consider that they were in control of that game for most of it, had a two score lead with 5 minutes to go. But we're going to need, can we just jump straight into talking about that game? Because you can say Washington State cooged it. I think it was really fitting because Wazoo cooged it and Oregon organed it. Like the way that the way that the cooging happened was classic Oregon too. Classic Chip Kelly Oregon. Like
the
they just hit you over the head.
Explosion of points all of a sudden.
It's a tight game. And then suddenly 2 minutes later, you're down by 20 and you're just like, what the heck just happened? And
but in this game, they were down by double digits and then suddenly they win the game.
Yeah, they were down by two scores. They score a touchdown. Wazoo has a three and out. They score a touchdown, pick six. And then it's like, Oregon is up by 10. And you're like, what even happened? So weird game, very weird game from the Washington State perspective. Weird game for us to evaluate how to apply it to USC. Because we were chatting and it was like, okay, so what do you take from the Oregon game? Well, if you look at the rest of the teams that Washington has faced, they have yet, and because you brought up that, well, is it better that Wazoo seems like a defensive team first because then USC can just still hope to outscore them? And I'm like, well, yes, they seem like they have some defensive juice, but Idaho, Wisconsin, Colorado State, Cal are all like the highest ranked offense in that in terms of scoring offense is Wisconsin, and they're ranked 70 something. So, and Colorado State is like 130th, and Cal is not very good on the offensive front. So the one team that is ranked in the top 25 in terms of scoring offense, Oregon, I think they're ranked 16th. They're the one that pops off 44 points against them. But then you countered with, yeah, but Oregon didn't score a touchdown until the second half, and they were held to field goals the entire first half, even though they were driving. So like Washington State's defense actually was very good in that game until that 2 minute flurry of like, what the hell just happened here, which is classic Oregon and classic Wazoo. So how do you apply any of that to a USC team that we can't even call anything classic about this team yet, because we have five games of evidence for what this current era of USC looks like. I don't know how to apply it.
So I think the Oregon game is very difficult because I watched a lot of that game.
Bo Nix had a pick six, so
it's going both ways. Bo Nix was
the Bo Nix experience.
He was up and down, absolutely. And you can say that Washington State's defense was good when you look at the scoring. And Oregon, first quarter, 3 points. Second quarter, 6 points. Third quarter, 6 points. They go into the fourth quarter with only 15 points. They went into the fourth quarter down 27-15, down 12. And you have to feel good about it if you're Washington State at that point. But they scored 29 points, including a pick six in the fourth quarter alone. I just pulled up the stat broadcast here. Oregon in that game. 624 yards. 624.
That's a lot of yards.
446 on the through the air, 178 on the ground. They average 8.1 yards per play. We can say that Bo Nix struggled early on in the game, and he did, but at the same point, like the total numbers are absolutely what you would take any day of the week if you're pulling for Oregon there.
Do they feel a little bit like what USC's defense has been pulling this whole year? It's like, yeah, they gave up 500 yards, but they only gave up 14 points. Like,
I mean,
a little bit like that.
Oregon went 6 of 7 in the red zone, but there's a lot of field goals in there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of those things where Oregon's drives, I'm going to pull up the drive chart right now. Oregon's drive chart, field goal, pick six, field goal, halftime. Touchdown, punt, touchdown, touchdown, end of game. Like,
So they got it going in the second half.
They only two punts, but they had, look at these drives, 69 yards, 65 yards, 81 yards, 64 yards. They didn't score a touchdown until the second half, but their four drives in the first half were all more than 65 yards.
So it's about efficiency.
So like what, how do you make that? Because what do you take of that? Because when we talk about Washington State's defense, it starts with Deion Henley, who's their stud outside linebacker, leads the defense in pretty much everything, tackles for loss, 9.5 tackles for loss, which I think last I checked is tops in the Pac-12.
After five games.
Yeah. He's insane. He's in line to be a Pac-12 player of the year on defense.
Yeah.
It all starts with him 100%. And this is the defense that has had a million sacks and all these things. And you look at their numbers and they're always in the backfield, they're wrecking havoc and all of this. And then again, 69 yards, 65 yards, 81 yards, 64 yards, 75 yards, 84 yards. So they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oregon had 8 drives of 65 yards or more in that game. So what are we going to say about this Washington State defense? Are they a defense that makes stops and forces you to kick field goals? Is this a systematic thing where that was on Bo Nix and at least early on? Or is Washington State very good? I don't know.
And that's why this game is a little bit difficult to evaluate. And a lot of early season games are difficult to evaluate because we have more evidence of what this team is with 5 games to evaluate. But when those 5 games are against teams that are either Oregon or a bunch of teams that are either bad or average, mediocre, the way that like Cal is, like,
right.
I don't think is a bad game.
The flip side is they haven't allowed more than 14 points to an FBS school.
Yes. Yeah.
Idaho scored 17 points that.
What a weird, like, how did.
Let's omit the FCS rivalry game from the whole conversation.
But that game also was, they gave up sacks and there was sort of just weirdness, right? Which is, I think, what my evaluation of putting together this rundown with all the stats and everything like that. This, to me, on paper, looks like a classic, like, bananas game, because I think this Wazoo team is exactly the kind of team that could just sort of have chaos happen, but also have chaos happen to them as well. Like, they have a lot of sacks. They are 7th in sacks this season. They're averaging 3.6 per game. They're 111th in sacks allowed, averaging 3 per game. Like, they are 116th in turnovers lost. And on Monday, there was a lot of chatter in the chat about how like Cameron Ward is a turnover machine and that was going to play a role in this. And absolutely that can be it. But they're also a team that gets after the quarterback. So if Caleb isn't able to be the Superman that we saw him be against ASU, then this might be the defense that forces more mistakes from USC. This might be the defense that has the sort of chaos bringers to be able to do that. So much of this is, to me, about USC making sure that they play a clean game. If USC plays the clean game, then I think USC has the ability to get through this Washington State team fairly routinely. If this is the game when USC decides to not play clean, a la the way that they played against Oregon State, where Caleb was missing passes and there was just sort of the
offensive... You mean clean in terms of mistakes, not necessarily turnovers?
Yes, mistakes. Not necessarily turnovers, although obviously turnovers are part of that, but
right.
Like mistakes in the sense of Caleb can't afford to throw that easy interception in the red zone into double coverage. You just can't make that same mistake again. Like, you can't do it. You can't have your offensive line beating up the quarterback. Like, you can't have your defense committing committing penalties that extend a drive. You can't have your defense. And these are things that you would say every game you can't have, but it's just one of those things where chaos could reign here. It could be a wild and wacky game, and that's the way that Washington State has a chance. If it's a straightforward game, I think USC rolls. The moment you talk about, like, pick six, like, look at the Oregon game. It's pick sixes. It's wildness. It's, you know, where the heck did that happen? It's sacks every which way. Like, it's just one of those things. So it's all about, as I hear players say all the time, like being on your P's and Q's and just checking your boxes.
Yeah, I want to talk about the rushing game here for USC going into this game. We've talked about it the last 2 weeks. SC should have run the ball more. They should have run the ball more against Oregon State when Caleb Williams is not on his game and he's completing 44% of his passes. Run the ball more. Mm-hmm. Get Travis Dye more involved so that way you can take some of the pressure off of Caleb Williams, especially when the offensive line is struggling, as we've seen in the last 2 weeks. Put more of that onus on the run game to try to make yourself not look one-dimensional, all of that. Well, here comes a Washington State defense that is, defensively, the numbers are insane. Absolutely insane. So they are 14th in the country in yards per carry against at 2.92. On the surface, you look at that and say, well, geez, how's SC going to run against them? Like, they're only giving up 2.92 yards per carry. And like, if SC is reluctant to run as much as they should in general, maybe that's going to be an issue. Well, let's talk about Oregon. Oregon in that game had a true 5.6 yards per carry average that wasn't affected by sacks because it didn't take a sack all game. That includes Bo Nix scrambling for 30 yards. They were able to run for 178 yards. Wisconsin, we know a team that commits to the run, ran for 174, albeit at a 3.95 clip, which I think if you're Washington State, you take that against the Badgers, right?
Yeah, but Wisconsin this year, too, is not the rushing power that they were. They're 56 nationally in rushing. So,
yeah, but again, I'm that's saying impact. You look at the numbers and it's like, well, Wazoo has held Idaho, Colorado State, and Cal to less than 2 yards per carry.
Yeah.
Colorado State and Cal were held to less than 1.3 yards per carry. Like, that's how, like, they weren't able to run the football at all and then had tackles for loss and sacks on top of those things, which really makes those numbers look atrocious. So, okay, how much stock do you put into those numbers at all? Do you think SC can be able to run the ball here or what? Because on paper, this looks like they could be one of the best rush defenses. But like I said, Oregon ran the ball seemingly no problem.
Just fine, right? Well, and that's, I want USC to find out. I want USC to find out. At the same time, when you look at where they sit in like passing defense, they're 87th in defensive passer rating, 116th in passing defense. So you might look at it if you're USC game planning for this and say, well, we don't need to run the ball because they're so bad in pass defense, then why bother? But like, part of me would like USC, the offense that we think USC can be, should be one that doesn't matter if you're playing a good rushing or good passing defense, you should be able to go in with the idea of you want to like punch the other team in the mouth and sort of demoralize them to a point.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be against USC going out and seeing if they can run the ball and knowing that Wazoo is going to spend their week thinking, well, what are we going to do about this passing offense? Well, how are we going to stop Jordan Addison? Well, how are we going to stop this? Like, they're already worrying about that. I don't think they're sitting here thinking like, well, how are we going to stop Travis Dye? But I would love for USC to come out and say, well, okay, you spent this whole time thinking we're going to kill you with Caleb Williams. Hello, this is my guy Dye. Welcome to the party. And give your offensive line a little bit of that confidence of running downhill and seeing if you can. If you can't, then plan B. Okay, Caleb, go out and do your thing. Like, I think you have worse options. But like, I would love to see USC go out and just say, you know what? No, we're a running team today. We're going to run the ball. And if you stop us from running the ball, then kudos to you, Washington State. You did your thing, and we will have to adjust to that and deal with that. But yeah, I would like to challenge Wazoo about their rushing defense. Challenge them to prove that they are a top 20 rushing defense.
Yeah, I agree. At the same time, I think that Lincoln Riley has made a killing off of being a balanced attack, of having a solid run game and a solid pass game. And you want to be able to do both of those for sure. And like you mentioned it, Washington State's pass defense is atrocious, 116th. Just like we saw, you know, previous games, Stanford's pass defense last year was atrocious. So what did SC do? They mauled them through the air, particularly in the first half of that game. So I think that it's going to be fascinating to see how the plan of attack is for SC on offense, what that balance is like, and all of that, because this is Washington State defense that, like I said, can be good and absolutely should not be overlooked. But at the same time, I think Oregon sort of laid the blueprint for there's a 600-yard defense in here if you will force them to be that.
Well, especially and I think that
if anyone's capable of making them another 600-yard defense, it's SC.
Especially when you consider, okay, how do we compare this game with the Oregon game? And where did Washington State's defense really struggle to contain? Well, I mean, part of it was they couldn't sack the quarterback. We've seen them sack every other quarterback that they faced. They've racked up, you know, multiple games where they've had 7 sacks, 0 sacks against Oregon. Well, what kind of quarterback is Bo Nix? He's a kind of scrambling mobiles or make plays with his legs kind of guy. Caleb Williams is even more than Bo Nix. Without the bonus experiences. And I think that could be, this could be another game where Caleb with his legs could become the key factor because he's probably going to have, I mean, this is the thing, like someone like Henley gets after the quarterback and gets sacks. They had a preseason all Pac-12 edge rusher in Ron Stone, who his numbers don't pop off at all. Like he has 7 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss and a sack, but big old circle. He has 6 QB hurries. So like he, and you sort of, what I do with players sometimes is, cause I haven't watched all the games, right? I did see a lot of the Oregon game, but haven't really seen the other ones. Like I just looked up on Twitter, like Ron Stone to see what people were talking about. I'm like, Wazoo fans were raving about him against Cal. He didn't, you know, do anything in particular against Cal, but he forced bad throws by the very nature of just getting close to the quarterback. So
kind of like what Corey Foreman did last week.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you have to take this pass rush seriously in that sense, but there's also might be room for the scrambly part of Caleb's game to really be thing that puts USC up over the top on this one.
But before we flip the side of the ball and talk about USC's defense going up against their offense, really quick points. USC has had an issue with pass protection. The offensive line the last 2 weeks has been a problem. And so while I think that this defense is susceptible to someone gashing them since Oregon laid the blueprint, at the same time, I think it's fair to say that Washington State probably has the best pass rush of anyone they've played up to this point and really is going to be the test for that
Utah too, like
that Utah game next week, mm-hmm. right? So it's going to be interesting to see what it's like for USC on offense because they got to get those guys healthy. They got to get Dedich healthy, and they got to get the left tackle position really solidified with Ford and Haskins. So let's talk about the other side of the ball, USC going up against Washington State's offense. It's a newcomer to the party, Cameron Ward, the transfer from Incarnate Word of the FCS. An interesting little player, 445 yards through the air so far, 13 TDs, great passer, 68.6% completion percentage, except 7 picks, sort of prone to making mistakes, a mistake prone quarterback going up against USC where the Trojans are number one in the country in forcing interceptions. That could be worrisome for the Cougars. At the same time, this is a Washington State offense that wants to move the ball through the air. Jake Dickert is not Nick Rolovich, and Nick Rolovich is not Mike Leach. But in a lot of ways, it's all not too dissimilar, right? It's not necessarily the air raid. Rolovich brought in the run and shoot from Hawaii, the old June Jones offense. And the run and shoot and the air raid are they're not
cousins?
They're sort of. What they want to do is the same thing. They want to put receivers in space and move the ball through the air. Albeit Mike Leach's offense, I think, is a little more methodical. Washington State's going to take more chances, and you see that when you look at the numbers of Cam Ward throwing seven picks. But Ward's a guy. I think that you look at the quarterbacks that SC has played thus far, he's higher on that list than Emory Jones from last week.
Yeah, and
there were some opponents.
And there were moments where Emory Jones got the best of USC's defense, and there was moments where USC's defense got the best of Emory Jones. So it's going to be another one of those quarterback situations where I think this will come down to USC's pass rush and getting Ward off his spot and making him uncomfortable and forcing him into bad throws. And we know that this defense can take advantage of those moments, can take advantage of a bad throw when it comes. And that's really where, if ever you needed to have your defense ready to create some turnovers, like feels like this is the one. Their passing offense is very balanced. On the rundown, we usually try to grab, the sort of top player from each position to highlight, but their top three wide receivers are basically identical stat sheets. Donovan Ollie, 27 receptions, 298 yards, 2 touchdowns. Dejon Stribling, 22 receptions, 286 yards, 4 touchdowns. Raynard Bell, 20 receptions, 282 yards, 2 touchdowns. Like, their leading receivers are within 15 yards of each other on the season, all three of them. So
yeah,
it's not a situation where you have to pay attention to one guy. If you have, Stribling blanketed, Ollie and Bell are going to eat. And if you have Bell blanketed, Stribling is going to eat. And it just sort of goes around. So the secondary as a whole is going to have to be on top of stuff. You can't get away with one guy not doing their job. You can't get away with, and obviously you never want to have blown coverage, but you can't necessarily depend on just Mekhi Blackmon being a shutdown quarterback Damani Jackson sort of being a shutdown quarterback. You got to make sure that your entire secondary is all on the same page and ready to contend with this passing offense. The other thing is that this might be a prime game where, I mean, and this is one of my big takeaways, is this is very much a as it plays out kind of game. So we're going to look back on key moments in this game.
What do you mean by that?
What's that mean? Like, we can say, Washington State has this many sacks and this many tackles for loss, and USC has this many sacks and this many tackles for loss and this many rushing yards and stuff. And you can, I think at the end, you're going to be able to look at the box score and not necessarily know exactly who won based on the box score, which a lot of times you can just based on a few key stats.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, it'll be, when did those plays happen? Not that they happened,
yeah,
but like, when did they happen? When did the momentum turn in this game? How did the momentum turn in this game? Where did it flip? And that's one of those things where you only get one red zone stop. But if it comes at the right time, it's a game changing. So you can give up, Wazoo gets into the red zone and scores 3 touchdowns. But if you time the one time where you stop them from scoring a touchdown at the right moment, the way that Oregon, part of why Oregon flipped the script on Wazoo is because of the timing of that 3-and-out. Because Wazoo had scored a touchdown at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Oregon had scored a touchdown to get within a possession of Wazoo. Wazoo comes back down and scores another touchdown to pull back away. And it's at that point where it's midway through the fourth quarter, and the Cougs should be home free from that point. They're almost in the position that USC was in with ASU, where it's like, we're kind of home free, but also a little nervous. And then what happens? Oregon scores. And what happens next? Instead of, we're just going to respond, it's a 3-and-out. And that 3-and-out is devastating. Oregon gets the ball back and scores. And at that point, Oregon has probably already won the game without adding the pick six on top of it. But it's about when you got that three and out. It's about the timing of where these things occur. So one of the things that I'm going to ask in over under is, you know, red zone conversions. Wazoo has been very good in the red zone. So how is USC's defense, which is also quite good in the red zone? Where do they get their stops? When do they get their stops, and how do they get their stops? Because I don't think it's because again, it's, you can get three red zone stops and the fourth one that you give up could be the devastating one. So timing. On the plus side, I think USC's defense has had excellent timing this year. We credited them against Oregon State for having the great timing.
Succeeded in
ASU when the pressure got put back on them, they had great, they responded. So I think that plays into USC's hands in this game. But it's also one of those things where we're going to look back at very, very, very specific moments as the things that that sort of tell the story of this game. And it'll be not that they happen, but that they happened at that specific moment. I hope that makes sense. Like, I don't know if I mean,
it was a long ramble.
Yeah, it's a little bit. It's not the like clearest ramble I've ever had, but so it makes sense to me.
I went into this game, into this preview, fully expecting, in doing before all my research and whatnot, to come into here and predict that this would be a dogfight. I mean, again, Washington State is a couple minutes away from being 5-0, and they're ranked 26th because they're the top team receiving votes. And we talked about if they were an SEC team, they'd probably be ranked, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. Having said that, everything I'm seeing on paper, and just going back to the Oregon game, and maybe that's unfair, I don't know. I just think this is the perfect matchup for SC right now. SC has not put together a perfect 60 minutes. It's early in year one. They don't have to do that yet. So I'm not judging the Lincoln Riley era for not having put a solid 60 minutes together yet. It's year one. They've played five games. But they're going to need to put the solid 60 minutes because there's a big game coming up in 10 days. This would be an apropos time of to start doing it. And I think this is a matchup in which if they do get everything working together, it would make sense in my head that it would happen here when you see that this is the team that is predominantly one-dimensional. Cameron Ward is going to throw the football. He's not a running quarterback. He is athletic, sure. He's not a statue who's going to get, just run backwards. He's not I think of UCLA's Ben Olsen of old, of just like stone feet and just waiting to get sacked. No, he's not that, but he's not a running quarterback in what Emory Jones was. And Emory Jones's ability to be mobile, I think, played a huge role last week and was something that we didn't talk about enough going into that game. And I don't think SC was necessarily prepared enough going into that game for either. And Cameron Ward's not going to be that guy. He's not going to run for a million yards on you. He's going to sit in the pocket and throw the football because he's a big armed quarterback. This offense in general is predominantly going to go through the air. Looking back at the Oregon game, again, as an example here, in that game, Washington State runs 72 plays. There are 48 passes thrown by Ward. Nakia Watson, their number one running back, and really the only running back that gets carries, had 12 carries. 12 carries in 72 plays. That's not enough, man. It's not enough to create balance at all. And I think that to beat SC right now, you need to be able to run the ball. It's what Oregon State did at times. It's what Fresno State did at times. It's what ASU did in the first half, was run the football. And if you're not running the football, you're playing into SC's hands, because SC's strengths on defense is the secondary forcing turnovers and the pass rush generating pressure to help the secondary out with those turnovers. Wazoo's whole game plan plays into that tenfold.
Well,
I wanted to go into this and think of it as this battle that was going to be like this, you know, very close one, because it's what I thought going in. And the more I look at this, I don't know. Maybe I'm naive, but I think this plays very well for SC this week. And I didn't expect to have that opinion.
I think we should have been tipped off on Sunday when Vegas put a line that I felt was too high for this game. We're going to talk about that in a little later. And looking at Bill Connolly's projection for this game is also sort of leaning in that direction too. But you did bring up something that, you know, makes me ask a question that people have been asking us is, I get that you are looking at that and saying that plays into USC's hands, but there's one very clear weak link there that it probably doesn't play into their hands, who probably would be better off facing a team that is a running attack team, because this particular player has been exposed in the passing game, and that's at linebacker. That's Shane Lee.
Yeah.
So is this a situation where, if you are, you sort of put on your defensive coordinator cap, is now the time to experiment a little bit with your linebackers and bring in somebody who is a little bit more capable of being a pass defender, a coverage guy, next to Eric Gentry?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to see if we see some mixing and matching there.
That's something I'm gonna have my eye on for sure, because we asked the question on Monday, like, well, the fact that those guys aren't playing suggests to us that they're not ready to play. Like, if the opportunities were there, if they were ready to take that opportunity, we would see them. Well, this to me feels like the ultimate show me kind of game, where if any of those other linebackers are deemed to be capable enough of seeing serious playing time this year, this would be the game that I would see what you got as far as defending the pass, because I think that Shane Lee, I mean, and it could be he just had a bad game against ASU and will come back and be ready to go and make a bunch of plays and have us eating our words, but that would be, if I'm Washington State's offense, I'm looking at that going like, that's the guy we need to target. We need to find his number and target him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got to prove that, that he can defend the pass a little bit more. At times I'm not going to say Lamar Dawson, 2012. It's not the Tampa 2, the Monty Kiffin Tampa 2 that, just completely backfired. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not that. But definitely a problem area for SC and something to work on. Let's get into the over-under before we make our predictions and then flip it over to questions.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I got to take an under here. I got three unders to take.
I'm going
to
do an under here.
All right, going into this, I have a 2-game lead. I am 20-18. You are an 18-20. You got to put some lines to get you back into this.
And I do not feel good about these lines this week, guys.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
All right, what's your first one?
All right, 136.5 rushing yards for USC. USC is averaging 183.8 yards per game this year, but they had their season low of 137 versus ASU. Wazoo is the highest ranked rushing defense that USC will have played. They're 19th in rushing defense. They give up 96.2 yards per game, 14th in rushing yards per carry, 2.92 yards per carry, as you mentioned before. So,
yeah.
USC making a statement on the ground, or USC saying, screw it, we choose not to run, or Washington State saying, you cannot run? Which way are you going?
I want to say that I would like SC to really commit to the run in this game, just because we've been calling it for it the last two games. especially if the offensive line is going to have trouble with the pass rush. Having said that, my gut is that given how susceptible Washington State is to the pass, the passing game is going to be a priority. But I still think that 136.5 is a line that you can keep the passing game a priority and still rush for that much. SC has too much firepower in the backfield with Dye and Relique Brown and Austin Jones, if he gets his groove back, then I'm going to take the over.
You had me switching my typing positions. I was like, ooh, getting ready with the U. And then, no,
going over.
With the O. And then, no, I'm going back to the U. And so, okay, you're the over. I got the other under then. What do you got?
Yeah, okay. My first over-under is 2.5. Over-under 2.5, Cam Ward interceptions. He has 7 in his last 4 games. He's thrown exactly 2 in each of his 3 games against Power 5 opponents. At Wisconsin, home to Oregon, home to Cal. What is he going to do in this game? 2.5 is the line. Can he get to 3 interceptions, or will it be less than that?
This is perfect because Josh in the chat threw in an over-under of 2+ picks for USC. So
it's already in the works.
You guys are already on the front there.
Yeah.
Okay. I just do not feel comfortable with picking an over-under that requires me to have 3 interceptions in order to win it. I'm going under. I think USC can still have a successful passing defense in this game without getting 3 interceptions. I feel more comfortable with saying there could be 1 or 2. So I'm just going with the under. I will not be surprised at all on Saturday when we're sitting on the CarCast and saying what a dummy Alicia was after there are 5 interceptions in this game. I'm just playing the numbers.
That's a good pick. It's a good pick. 2.5 is a lot.
It's a lot.
He could have 2 interceptions and, you know, still not
hit that.
Hit the over there. So, yeah, it's a good pick. What's your next one?
All right. I got 2.5 red zone touchdowns for Washington State. Wazoo has scored 3 or more red zone touchdowns in all but 1 game. Their red zone percentage is 95.94 overall scoring, 76.19 for touchdowns. Both of those are very good numbers. USC has allowed more than 2 red zone touchdowns just once. That was against Stanford. Stanford had 4. So we're going 2.5 red zone touchdowns for Washington State, and we are designating a red zone touchdown as it would appear in the stat book as a red zone score.
Yeah, so if you score on a 50-yard run, it doesn't count.
That's not a red zone touchdown, yeah. Yes.
Under.
Okay. Feeling USC's defense.
I don't know if I'm feeling USC's defense as much as I'm just saying under. 2.5 is you know. Mm-hmm. The SC's defense can be vulnerable and still get the under here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. My next one is 33.3 yards for Washington State's longest kickoff return in this game. Nobody in FBS has allowed more 30-plus yard kickoff returns than USC with 5. However, SC's not given up a 40-yard run. 40-yard return. So they've just given up 33s, 35s, 36s, etc. Washington State, mind you, only has 4 returns in the entire season. They are a team that knows how to fair catch and take their ball at the 25.
So however, their special teams approach is our dream.
Yes. However, they have 1 of those 4 returns was a touchdown. We talked about how Utah is the special teams juggernaut in this conference, and you got to be prepared on special teams going to Utah. Well, Washington State literally has a kickoff return for a touchdown this year. That's a problem for SC we've already discussed. So 33.5 for Washington State's longest kickoff return of the game.
Okay. I just looked up.
I'm glad I don't have to pick this, by the way.
I hate that I have to pick this. I just looked up USC's touchback percentage on the season. It's less than 50%. against Arizona State, it was 57%. So that was better. I don't like this. My instinct was to say over because I think a 35-yard return is very plausible. My counter instinct was, but they haven't had enough returns. Like, are they even going to have a return at all in this game? But then my counter instinct was, well, USC, if the offense is rolling, then they could force several returns going the other way. So, like, the more USC scores, the more that Washington State will have opportunities to return the ball and the more they might try to push it. So all of that is Sam going over. And that's a big old shrug. I don't know. It's a 50-50 shot.
Yeah, I wouldn't know how to pick it. So I'm glad you can set the line there or set the picks there. And we will go from there. What's your last over-under pick?
All right, I got 4.5 sacks for USC. This is an insane line that I have set, but yes, I'm doing it.
4.5 sacks?
I'm doing it. Why? USC has had 4 sacks in all but one game and 3 games with 5 sacks. Wazoo. Okay, and this is where things get tricky. Let's go through this. According to NCAA stats, CFB stats, all of the official stat pages, Wazoo has given up 15 sacks this year. I can't find 3 of those sacks, so if somebody knows how to double check this, check the tape, do whatever you need to do to confirm that this is either a massive mistake on the NCAA stats, like official stats page for the NCAA, or there was some sort of phantom sacks that I'm not aware of. I have 3 versus Idaho. These are allowed, sacks allowed. 3 versus Idaho, 2 versus Wisconsin, 2 versus Colorado State, 4 versus Oregon, 1 versus Cal. My mathing is not good, but to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that's 12 sacks, correct? 3 plus 2 is 5, 5 plus 2 is 7, 4 plus 7 is 11, 11 plus 1 is 12.
That's correct.
Yeah. So I don't know what the hell is going on. Either way, Wazoo has not done a great job of preventing the quarterback from getting sacked. Ward has not done a great job of getting rid of the ball quickly enough to not get sacked. And USC, the only thing that they've really done consistently on defense is to get a lot of sacks, despite the fact that I still look at the pass rush and say, like, well, they could be better. So it's insane. I'm setting it at 4.5, YOLO.
Okay, USC is very sacks positive. We've talked about this before. but 4.5 is insane. I'm not biting. It's going to be... Give me the under. If they get over that, then there'll be a hell of a performance for SC. Absolutely. But 4.5 sacks, it's just that you're baiting me, and I'm not going to take that gamble at all.
Maybe I'm baiting you into taking the under, and you did take that gamble.
Maybe, but I'm taking the under. My last one is also going to be over under 4.5. It's Brendan Rice catches. 4 against Fresno State, 3 against Oregon State, 3 against ASU. 4.5 is the line, which is his career high is 5. He had that at Oregon last year, 102 yards with Colorado. The line is a bit high, just like your sacks, in that he hasn't gotten over it yet. But I think that in a game like this where Washington State's defense is susceptible to the pass, maybe we see some more Brendan Rice. I think he has played very well and deserving of more action in the distribution of the passing game. What say you? 4.5 Brendan Rice catches.
We have been saying all season, like, we're due for a big Brendan Rice game. This could absolutely be the game. I think it's entirely possible. At the same time, Jordan Addison needs to eat. Mario Williams needs to eat. Taj Washington needs to eat. Kyron Hudson is now coming through. He needs to eat. So I'm going to go under just because as much as I would enjoy Brendan Rice having that many catches in a game, I just think there's so many other players who could be catching the ball that I don't want to bet on that over.
All right, that's fine. I like it. I like the it gives me the over, locks me into the over, which gives me a chance to see it come to fruition.
There you go.
Big Brendan Rice game. Calling it right now. All right. Game predictions. Bill Connolly's numbers has SC by 9.1 points, a 70% win probability. Vegas, as of the recording of this podcast, has the line at 13 points for the Trojans. If you do the math with the over-under and the Vegas line, that's like 39.5 to 26.5 or whatever. What say you? What are your predictions, Alicia? And if you're watching this live on YouTube, pop in your prediction in the chat as well.
All right. I am going USC 35, Wazoo 24. I think that I just have a feeling that the Cougars defense is going to be able to get a few more stops than other teams have been able to get on this offense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Washington State is going to score like ASU was able to score, taking advantage of when USC's defense isn't quite there. I think Ward can do some damage to USC's defense when he's not doing damage to himself. So it's going to be sort of a back and forth on that front. And 35-24. Yeah. Not covering a spread that I feel is a little bit too big, but closer to Bill Connolly's 9.
I like that score a lot. A lot. To the point where when I came in here, I mentioned before that I thought that this pre-pod research, I was thinking that this was going to be super, super tight. And I was prepared to say that this was going to be a 31-27 USC win. After mulling it over, talking it out, all that stuff, I thought, you know, your score looks about right. I nearly wrote in almost your identical score, but that's no fun. So I said that I think that this matchup plays well for SC, I think. Given how Washington State is one-dimensional, Cam Ward is prone to making mistakes, plays right into what USC's defense wants to do, which is get after you and the quarterback, force you to make mistakes, and having a secondary which is more than willing to snatch the balls out of the air and run the other way. Put that all together, I think SC wins and covers 37-20.
I think I would enjoy watching the game that you have laid out. 37-20 scoreline.
I think that I sort of see this, you know, maybe I'm looking too much into the Oregon game, but I sort of see this going a little bit like the Oregon game, in which those 37 points, you know what that means? It means you score 4 touchdowns, but you add 3 field goals because you keep getting the ball down there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, maybe you're settling for field goals that you wish you could finish off with touchdowns. Maybe that's an issue, sure. But you're still scoring points because you're still moving the ball in this Washington State defense. And I think that on the flip side, SC is able to contain the passing game of Cam Ward. That's what I have down.
Yeah, Tim and Batman in the chat both think USC scores 42. But I think they also both think that USC's defense is a little bit more vulnerable in this game. Tim has USC giving up 28. Batman has USC giving up 35. Yeah. We've got a 49-34 from touchdown USC. So people, to be fair, going a little lower on that, 33-23. So, you know, I think people are.
Yeah, I think people are feeling SC this week. We'll see how that plays out. SC and Washington State coming up again Saturday night at 4:30 on Big Fox. Let's wrap this thing up by going to the questions. We've got some questions into our mailbag here on YouTube.
You've got mail.
Let's open it up there. If you got any additional questions, pop them into the chat, put the word question at the beginning, and we'll be sure to tag them and read them off. Here's what we've gotten so far. Josh says, are we happy SC never hired Brett Venables? I am. The Sooners are a dumpster fire in a drought. All right. Here's what I'm going to say about this. We've talked about this before. About, you know, hiring anyone's a gamble. But if you go off of, I like to go off of the profile. Like, okay, you know when there's a serial killer This is a hell of a transition, I know.
I love it.
And they have someone who profiles what the serial killer would be.
You're an FBI profiler.
Yeah, and they're like, well, it's probably a, judging by his crime.
42-year-old to 50-year-old man.
Yeah, he's probably a man who probably lives in this area who does this.
He probably works in construction.
Yes, or whatever it is, right? So I like talking about the coaches as profiles. And you look at the big coaches in the country. Brett Venables was someone who fits the profile of Bob Stoops, a national championship winning defensive coordinator. He fits the profile of Kirby Smart, national championship winning defensive coordinator. Those guys can absolutely pan out. And I think that there is a reason why we had Brent Venables high on the list when we did our tier rankings of candidates for USC to go after. And absolutely would have been somewhere where I think SC could have felt really good. And I'm not going to judge Brent Venables through five games, just like I'm not going to judge Lincoln Riley through five games. Having said that, Lincoln Riley, we never mentioned in that tier list because he would have been way ahead of them because we never thought he was possible.
Yes. We only talked about coaches. Like, we didn't have Nick Saban on that tier list because that was not realistic. So, yeah, Lincoln Riley would have been way ahead. The big difference here is that hiring a coach without head coaching experience is even more of a gamble than every hire that you have there. And that was always the risk behind Brett Venables, is the idea of, well, he's been a defensive coordinator for so long. Does he have what it takes to be a head coach? We just did not know that. Like you said, it is way too early to write him off, especially taking over a program that was in turmoil. If he had taken over USC under the same circumstances, we would be sitting here saying he needs more time. He needs more time to put his stamp on a program. And Oklahoma, this is part of why I was sort of laughing at them all summer, is that like they didn't want to acknowledge that like losing a legitimately great head coach was going to be problematic for their program. And they made the best hire available to them, but they were still bound to go through growing pains because the head coach is installing new defensive schemes. The offensive coordinator is coming from his own place and sort of bringing in his own offensive schemes. Change has consequences. And it's very difficult for coaches to take over in year one and hit the ground running. I think that what we've seen from Brett Venables is much closer to what I sort of expected from Lincoln Riley. And guess what, guys? There's still time this year for that to happen to Lincoln Riley, too. Like, USC fans should not get too ahead of themselves, because a loss this week and a loss next week suddenly puts USC, you know, right down there in the humbled position that Oklahoma currently is. So don't judge coaches by year one is the big, unless you're in an extreme, unless we're talking very, very, very big extremes where like you're literally 0-6.
Urban Meyer at Jacksonville.
Yes. Or Urban Meyer at Jacksonville. Like, there are extremes where you can figure out in year one, yes, this was a bad idea.
Right.
But like for most of the time, you got to take it little by little and then see where you go. But the fact of the matter is, I think Oklahoma made a good hire. If it doesn't ultimately turn out down the line, then it'll just go down in the pantheon of Tom Herman at Texas and a million other like good hires that have happened that didn't pan out either.
Yeah. Alex says, if USC will have one Pac-12 loss, which loss would you prefer it to be? Washington State, Utah, or UCLA?
Answer, honestly, is Washington State.
Real answer is, who cares?
Well, I do care.
Do you care?
Yes, because I think losing to Washington State but beating Utah and beating UCLA tells me way more about this team. Like,
about their potential.
Yes. I want to see a potential win. Where if you lose to Washington State, but I'm sorry, you beat Washington State, but then lose to Utah, I don't know that we learned anything about the impressiveness of going into Salt Lake City and beating Utah in that stadium.
It wipes away whatever
happens. Wipes away whatever happens this week.
Yes.
And losing to UCLA is just a bad feeling in your mouth. You don't want it to happen. So that would never be one of my choices. You absolutely cannot, especially because it's so late in the season. Like, you want to end your season on a positive note. So yeah, certainly.
So the reason why I say who cares strictly is because I'm looking at this of, if you're a one loss team, you're going to the championship game, assuming there's not a three-way one loss
madness. Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. But you'd be going to the championship game. And at that point, who do you want to potentially have a revenge game against? And I don't know. I think it would be fascinating if it was if the loss was UCLA and then you face them again in the championship game.
Actually, that's the best case scenario.
Like, because then you're avenging that loss. Does that eliminate the loss in the first one?
No, I don't think that applies to the UCLA game. I think it applies to the Utah game, though.
Yes.
You lose to Utah and then get to play them again in the championship game and then beat them in the championship game.
Yeah.
You have lost to the best team of those three and then also beaten the best team of those three in that scenario. So right. So that sort of plays into things. But let's go with none and see how that feels.
Yeah. Our pal Kenny says, is this a bigger test than Oregon State? I want to say no because of the road environment angle. Road games on the road. Obviously, road games are on the road. But like, road games are where good teams go to die anyways.
Yes.
I think that outweighs the hostility and how good Oregon State has been just in general. If we're going to say both teams are equal, which I think is probably about fair, Oregon State, Washington State, I don't think one of them is decidedly way better than the other. They're in the same general tier. Can we agree on that part?
Mm-hmm.
I think the road game is a bigger test.
Yes.
However, this does have the look ahead aspect.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Josh says, what happens first? Reggie Bush gets his Heisman back, or they do something worthwhile with the Sun Deck. He's never getting the Heisman back. I can't see it.
And they're so dumb. They're so dumb. It's
should have never been taken away. And it's never like the whole thing is meaningless in the sense of, we all know he won it. Let's stop pretending like it was taken away. At the same time, I don't know. He should get it back. I agree, but I wouldn't hold my breath. AK says, are the fans blasé because we expect a Lincoln-led team to be explosive? I don't know that SC fans are blasé right now about anything other than the.
I mean, fans are going to be upset if USC doesn't go out and score 40 points in any game.
Yeah.
I would say that fans do have expectations of this offense that I would temper a little bit because it's year one, but also this offense has scored 40 points in all of these games pretty much except for the one. So they've also earned the sort of expectations to a certain point. So yeah, I think fans get it. I think fans are very overconfident just about the fact that Lincoln Riley is the head coach and willing to disregard the fact that it is year one and the defense still has a lot of work to do and the whole nine yards and expecting a championship in year one. Like that, I think people are going too far, but fans are going to fan. So
fans will fan.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I think we've been, critical of the last two games and some of the performance on offense and defense in certain aspects. At the same time, every time we are critical, somebody says that we are too positive. And anytime that we are positive, people say that we're too critical. So I think you're going to find fans of any spectrum at all times. There's going to be blasé fans. There's going to be fans who feel so good about the OSU win and who are amped about the ASU game because that was a Heisman level performance from Caleb Williams. There's absolutely plenty of people out there who feel that way. So I don't think there's a blasé fan base at all. There might be some blasé people, but the fan base, no. Josh says, do you think Lincoln Riley has been trying not to overwork the running backs in preparation for the toughest battle with Utah? I don't think so. I think you work on load management in general, but I don't think you prepare for Utah quite like that. And the other thing is, I think we collectively, having seen this team for so much, know and talk about the Utah game as this physical battle. I don't know that Lincoln Riley comes from the outsider perspective and has the trauma of playing against Utah at Rice-Eccles to the point where he has to think about those things in the same way.
Well,
I think he looks at Utah as a very good team, and a team to be you need to prepare for. I don't think he thinks of Utah in the sense of like they are such a good team that we need to be preparing for them 3 weeks in advance by holding Travis Dye out of games.
Yeah.
Not out of games, but like not running with him on every down.
I also think that like coaches should know better than that. Coaches should know that if you are focusing so much on the next week, this is the week that you could get bit.
Yeah.
There was no reason USC couldn't get bit last week. So holding out Travis Dye for that reason, I think the better reason is just they have Caleb Dye in there. They're depending on him. Caleb Williams. And they're willing to depend on him.
Yeah. Alex says, has Lincoln Riley ever had a special teams assistant coach assistant while he's been a head coach? So I looked it up. Yes. His first couple of years, first three seasons, Jay Boulware, who is the as Wikipedia says, most recently the assistant head coach for special teams and tight ends at Texas. He was there last year. In 2020. He was there in 2020 under Herman. He was the guy who did special teams and running backs at OU and was there, predated Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley inherited him just like he inherited the whole staff in 2017. And so he was there, but when he left, he did not get replaced with someone who had the specific task of doing special teams.
Yeah, people asked in the chat if we knew which coaches were responsible for specific special teams things. We don't. They're not listed on the roster, their special teams duties. And since people aren't able to observe practice anymore, we certainly won't be able to find that out.
Yeah. Yeah, unless he's asked specifically about it. Yeah. And if they have, then I've not seen that. Alex also says, will OU lose to Sark in Texas this week? I don't know, but it's going to be a fun game. And always Red River always delivers.
That is going to be a fascinating game. But remember, rivalry game, throw everything out.
It's a shootout. It's not a rivalry.
It's a rivalry game.
Red River. I prefer Red River, the original name. Shootout.
Okay, the Red River shootout is a rivalry game.
I know.
Throw everything out.
SJ, what's more important? SC offense starting fast, the defense starting fast. Realistically, it's the defense starting fast, but the offense starting fast and the Gravedigger offense, I think, would be nice to see again.
I disagree with you 100,000% the offense starting fast.
You want to bury him?
Bury him. Just go out there and put up an easy touchdown to start. Next drive, easy touchdown. Next drive, easy touchdown. Make that defense realize that they can't stop this offense.
To be fair, says any update on Relique Brown's recovery?
Lincoln Riley, in some interview earlier this week, said that he's as close to 100% as he's been this week. So that's good news.
Yeah, and we'll see how he gets involved. He got involved fairly often last week against ASU. Last question comes from Mark. Do you think UCLA can challenge Utah this weekend and give us a blueprint to beat them next week? Yes, honestly. Right now, who's the best quarterback in the Pac-12?
DTR.
DTR or Caleb Williams. Pick your poison.
Yeah.
The numbers are almost the same. They're very similar. I think DTR might be a little quicker with his feet, but Caleb Williams is just as nimble and just as as shifty and going to get out of everything. They're basically the same dude at this point. I think it's going to be fascinating for Utah facing them both back to back. If I was a Utah fan, I would be terrified facing both of them. They both look on top of their game. So yes, I think they could be given a blueprint, but also anything they do would just give Utah the ability to make adjustments for SC the next week, if that was the case as well.
Yeah, it transference in college football is hard to deal. Like how UCLA plays Utah doesn't necessarily translate to how USC will be able to play Utah. Yeah. Different squads, different approaches, all that kind of stuff. But certainly coaches are looking at the tape and seeing where there are vulnerabilities that they could try to take advantage of as well. So yes, UCLA giving Utah a tough, tough game probably is better for USC than Utah going out and absolutely steamrolling UCLA. And then us feeling like,
Yeah. I said Mark's question was the last one, but we got a really good one here from Lincoln's Pfizer. I'm eating two mozzarella sticks that have melted together. Is it now one mozzarella stick?
No, it's two. Because if the coating on each was fully around each, they are two stuck together. Like two fries that are stuck together aren't one fry. Okay. They're two fries that are stuck together.
With my lasagna logic, yes, I agree. They would be two.
Well, your lasagna logic is bad, though. But realistically,
them melding together and becoming one, I'd love it's like the mozzarella stick has gained power. Yeah. So that's where I'm going with that.
Yeah. Also, shout out to all the people who have sent us photos of Costco Kirkland signature Italian sausage and beef lasagna.
And Ron Burgundy 209 says, shout out to Penguin of Troy. Remember her from the old WRSC message board.
Shout out to all my WRSC folks. I remember you too, Ron Burgundy.
Yeah.
Good times. Everyone who was on the WRSC board, I love y'all. We had many, many, many good times. And yeah.
Rest in peace,
Gary P. Yeah.
The OG for sure.
Yes.
All right. We got to run. We will hop out of here. We'll be back after the game Saturday night against Washington State.
USC and Washington State. You were going to say
Utah. No, I was going to say
USC. UCLA.
All right. Until then, we will see you. See ya.
See ya.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.